Hello, and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. Today, we're talking about art and architecture. My first guest is artist Gerson, creator of the gorgeous new sketchbook, New Orleans Sojourn. And we'll talk with architecture professor John Klingman, author of New in New Orleans Architecture. Gerson is a French artist, graphic novelist, and filmmaker who came to New Orleans for the first time in 2010. He captures his impressions of the city in a gorgeous new book, New Orleans Sojourns, published by the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. Welcome to The Reading Life.
Thank you.
Thank you. Why did you want to come to New Orleans in the first place?
The first attraction was the voodoo culture.
Because
I like whatever is mysterious, whatever has history and legend.
Well, we certainly have that.
I discovered that. I also came because of jazz, but that wasn't the main part for me. Mm-hmm. And actually, when I was here, I was overwhelmed by jazz. So my book is more about jazz than voodoo, but you know.
Now, you started off your American journey in Montreal, right, in Canada?
Yeah.
And then you took a bus down to New Orleans and ended up here. And you meant to stay only a short time.
The first plan was to stay for a month and a half. And because I found some friends, some work, some possibility to earn a bit of money, just needed to stay more. I stayed until the last part.
And did the city feel familiar to you? Did it feel French? Did it feel American? What was it like for you?
It felt unique, that's for sure. French, no. I think it has this exception, like some cities like Paris or Barcelona, that has a lot of mixed culture in it. So you can feel a bit French, a bit American, a bit Spanish, a bit whatever, but you are from New Orleans because this is this city.
Now, in addition to voodoo and jazz, what else drew you here? Did you have a list of things you wanted to see? Did you have like a bucket list of things you wanted to check off?
No bucket list, just adventure.
Ah.
Just go there for something and just see where it might lead, you know?
And yet you captured all the major things. You have this wonderful drawing of Preservation Hall, which is such a, you know, a mecca for jazz lovers. You have Jackson Square, of course. Mm-hmm. You have Lara Plantation. That looked like an adventure for you, too.
Yeah, it was. I mean, when I drew Lara Plantation, I made it in 3 days to make all the drawings, almost 3 days. And the next day, I was in the American History Museum in the Treme, and the same night, I was assisting to this voodoo ceremony. So in the same day, I met a lot of the people that were there in the plantation or the symbol of it. It was an adventure, but I planned nothing that was really magical about it.
You plan to be open, I think, and experience what was there.
Yeah, actually, yeah. And to draw a lot. I mean, I was not there for vacation. I was there to capture. Mm-hmm. I was there to make a sketchbook that will allow me to make a graphic novel about it. I didn't have the time to do it yet, but that was the goal.
And you met so many local characters. You have so many wonderful musicians in this book, for example, as street figures that were very, you know, are common to New Orleanians. And you got this great cross-section of people. Because, you know, you think when you look at a drawing of someone, someone has to trust you to allow you to draw them. That's a moment. And you really captured them. How did you do that?
Actually, when I come to a place, I try to blend in, so that people won't know where I'm from. So actually, when I start speaking, you say, oh, you're French. Yeah, I am. But when I don't talk, or when I say just a few words, I can be Scottish, Canadian, American. I mean, I can be from anywhere. So it's kind of cool. Anyway, so my exercise is to blend in, and sometimes to capture drawing when the people are not knowing it, sometimes to ask. So I would say that in this book, you have both of them. you have some drawing I capture and then show, they say, it's you. And some drawing I said, can I draw you?
And they said yes.
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes, no. It depends.
Oh, sometimes, no. Describe your color palette. It's so exquisite. I mean, New Orleans to me is a city that's very beautiful on a rainy day. Yeah. You know, the light is sort of different. The colors are sort of muted but glowing. And this book really captures what I think of as the way New Orleans looks.
Mm, so I'm lucky.
Maybe so.
Actually, I use watercolor, ink, and since New Orleans, I use coffee.
Coffee?
Yeah. And I try a different style of coffee. You know, I tried espresso, I tried mocha, but, you know, without sugar, of course. And I tried Marie Antoinette coffee also. And the best one for New Orleans was the Marie Antoinette coffee.
Very good to know. I mean, that's they're really wonderful colors. They really are.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a layer I put when the watercolor is finished. I put this layer that gives the warmth of New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. And the story of this book's publication is quite interesting as well. Would you tell us a little bit about that?
Of course, of course. I started meeting musicians after the third week I was here. And around that time, I met Russell, who is now a good friend of mine, that owned the New Orleans library on the New Orleans street.
Russell Desmond.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's a really cool guy. Actually, he started selling my drawings. When he saw, like the sketchbook I'm doing now, he saw the first premise of this sketchbook, this book, and he said it could be published. I know someone. And he started speaking about it. And then I met another girl with Ina Frendish, who used to work in the museum, and who is also an author.
And that, she's written a biography of Marie Laveau, so of course.
Yeah, we'll make some drawing for her. I'm supposing to do it. So anyway. And she spoke about also an editor. And the both of them, while they were not knowing each other, spoke about the same man. And at the end of my trip, Ina at one point just found me where I was and took my arm and said, you have to meet the editor. You have to meet. So she took me to the Frenchman Street and she presented me Gems. And he saw the book and in a nutshell, he said, I'm printing this.
And that would be James Wilson at the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press.
It is.
Really, it's such a great story to go to the New Orleans Book Fair and sell a book like this. It's really serendipity in the extreme.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm very lucky.
This is the basis for you, in your mind, of a graphic novel.
This is the base of whatever lies in New Orleans that I can use. Now I have yet to find a story. Like a tale, whenever you have a lot of tales, so I have to pick one that please me and then do it with whatever I captured. So that's the start.
And where have you traveled since?
I stayed in Paris for a long time, earning money and working. And my last travel is Barcelona in Spain.
And you brought your beautiful sketchbook from Barcelona with you today. It's really lovely, too.
Thank you.
Now, this book, New Orleans Sojourn, it's one of the most beautiful books I've ever seen about our city, and I think people will really love it. We've been talking with Gersin, the artist behind New Orleans Sojourns, and if you hurry, you can meet him tonight, April 24th, at Octavia Books. He started signing at 6 o'clock. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
John Klingman holds the Richard Koch Chair in Architecture at Tulane University. A licensed architect himself, he writes an annual Best New Orleans Architecture series for New Orleans Magazine. Today, we're talking about his new book, New in New Orleans Architecture. Welcome to The Reading Life, John.
Oh, thank you so much, Susan. It's great to be here.
Now, as you know, when people talk about New Orleans architecture, they have a stock set of images they pull upon. You know, shotgun houses, St. Charles Avenue mansions, wrought iron fences, the French Quarter, and you're showing us something very, very different in this book.
Yes, exactly. It's interesting that New Orleans, as a world-class city, it's famous for its culture, famous for its music, its cuisine, as you know. And people always say that it's famous for its architecture, but they always mean the 19th century architecture. It's as though that if people were talking about New Orleans music, they would say, well, it's everything that stopped with the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And it's not as though we have any great 20th or 21st century musicians, which, as you know, we have dozens of world-class musicians. So I kind of think it's the same way for architecture, that nobody knows about it. But in fact, at least in the last 15 years, there have been a large number of very high-quality buildings that I wanted people to be able to know more about and appreciate.
So when did you start writing about architecture for New Orleans Magazine?
It was 1997. As you know, New Orleans Magazine is a best of magazine. So mm-hmm. it's best lawyers, best doctors, best chefs. And I think they only had 11 bests. So they were looking for their 12th month. And they said, what about best architecture? So they called Tulane, and I ended up asking to do it because I thought it would be kind of in the public interest and fun as well. And it has been. It's been really interesting. And so what I've done is I compiled 80 of the most outstanding projects from the last 15 years into this one volume. And I think for people paging through, a lot of the projects are going to be familiar, but it's the first time that anybody will have seen them all in one place.
And you've divided them up into types of buildings, office and commercial buildings, school and university facilities, institutions, and residential buildings. Tell us about some of your favorites.
Well, it's so interesting. I mean, in a way, I have 80 favorites.
I bet.
And every year, there are choices to be made. And some years, some pretty good buildings got left out just because we didn't have space. And so I'm not saying that these are the best 80 projects, but I'm saying that these are 80 outstanding projects. One that I'd point to, maybe a little bit counterintuitively, is Bamboo, the building along Magazine Street, just between Napoleon and Louisiana. And I think it's interesting because even people with a bias toward 19th century New Orleans architecture really like that building. And I haven't found anybody yet in talking to dozens and dozens of people who doesn't like it. So even though sometimes there's this reaction from the public that is not so positive toward contemporary architecture, when you start to talk about individual buildings, it turns out that people like a good number of them.
And the whole time that building was going up, people would drive down Magazine Street and would just, their jaws would drop. It was really incredible.
Yes. Yes. I think it's really true. I have been biased a little bit in the book toward more public projects rather than houses, because I think it's great if people can actually explore buildings. And obviously, you can't explore a house unless somebody invites you in. But the school and university buildings and some of the civic buildings, the arena, for example, are easy to get into and walk around and kind of understand what they're about, not only from the kind of what they look like, but also how they feel when you're inside. And that's very important.
And you have Octavia Books. You have a bookstore.
Yes, Octavia Books is another wonderful, small kind of sleeper project, but it's an absolutely fantastic melding of old and new. Mm-hmm. And I think this is another theme for New Orleans architecture, which is that our new structures really have to have some empathy with our strong existing buildings. I think that's really important. It's possible for some buildings to be so, I would say, self-referential that they don't really participate so much in the dialogue that constitutes the city. That's one of the reasons that I haven't used any of the Make It Right projects in the book, because I feel as though they're kind of, in a way, the opposite of what we should be and can do. And there's some good examples in the book. But I think it's important also that we build in a contemporary way in New Orleans so that people aren't confused about what's real history and what's faux history.
Another thing I thought was so interesting was that you included the fire stations in St. Bernard, two of those.
Yes. Well, as you know, 98% of the buildings in St. Bernard Parish were damaged or destroyed during Katrina. So they've had a lot of rebuilding to do. And I think small public buildings are very important sources of outstanding architecture. And this has been true throughout architectural history. Branch libraries, fire stations, small civic buildings. These are kind of the bread and butter of what constitutes good architecture, really worldwide.
Have you been to look at the new New Orleans public libraries yet?
Not yet.
Well, they're out there.
Yes, that's 2013 for
oh,
sure.
Oh, right, of
yes.
course.
So, and that's going to be part of Volume 2, which will be coming out in about 14 more years.
All right.
And veterinary hospitals, too. I found that so charming because I had been in some of those, of course.
Yes. I think that what's interesting is that almost any building type can have really strong contemporary architecture. It's not a matter that only certain kinds of buildings are considered valuable for current design. And so there are, I think, three veterinary buildings. There are also some other medical buildings that are in the book as well. And I think it's important to recognize all of this.
And it's not that you don't appreciate other kinds of architecture, because you are the chairman of the Architectural Review Committee of the New Orleans Historic District Landmark Commission. So obviously you have a heart for what most people love about New Orleans. But what kind of house do you live in? That's really what I wanted to know after I looked at this book.
Well, I live in an 1898 Emil Weil house, 1,300 square feet. And it's absolutely wonderful on the outside. I really haven't done anything noticeable to change the appearance. On the inside, I've done many things. Weil became a very prominent New Orleans architect, designing the Sanger, the Dixon Hall at Tulane, and Toro Synagogue, dozens of other buildings. And he was only 21 when he designed my house, which is really interesting.
So it's young old architecture
all
at the same time.
Exactly.
And I loved it because when you were talking about Franklin Adams and Cindy Morse's house, their, you know, side-by-side houses, which I admire so much, and you said that like them, you've given up air conditioning.
It's true. I teach environmental issues at the School of Architecture at Tulane, and I've really felt that so much of what constitutes New Orleans ambience has to do with living in this zone between indoors and outdoors. And I found that as long as you can get air moving and you can be in the shade, that you can actually be quite comfortable. And I'd prefer to hear the birds and the natural sounds than to be shut apart from those when living in the warm months.
And I loved it that you made that point about how few houses here have windows that actually open.
It's true. But if you think about the elements of New Orleans architecture, one that characterizes both old and, I think, the good new buildings are very large openings. And in the old days, of course, this was for air movement. But I think now when you see buildings with large openings, they just feel like they're part of New Orleans architecture. One of the other ubiquitous elements is the shutter. And shutters in New Orleans are extremely important and extremely useful. They cut down on solar heat gain by 85%. Compared to an opening that doesn't have shutters. So you'll see even in the new buildings that are in the book, there are a number of them that have shutters as part of their system. Another element is the porch. Porches are incredibly important in New Orleans, and there are also quite a number of porches that show up in the book. So the architects now who are practicing, they're doing things that are 21st century, but they're also doing things that are strongly related to the place in which we find ourselves. And that's what I find fascinating. And I think that, in a way, we're one of the few cities that really could have this dialogue between the past, the present, and the future in a way that could be incredibly compelling.
Oh, right. And one of the other things is that we are so neighborhood-centered in New Orleans. And I noticed you took care to include projects from every neighborhood in the city.
Yes. Yes, I think that's right. I mean, some neighborhoods are more, I would say, open to contemporary architecture than others. But one of the points in the book is that if you see all of these projects from all the different places around the city and even the surrounding parishes, you start to realize that there's a critical mass of wonderful new buildings. And the last time this happened in New Orleans was in the 1950s and 60s, when we also had a really strong legacy. It was the era of the City Hall, of the Public Library on Loyola Avenue, which was proclaimed to be one of the best buildings in the entire country.
Isn't
in 1955.
Amazing?
Yes.
I love it. It's like, oh, come on, let's fix it up.
That's right. Oh, definitely. Absolutely.
Oh, and the other thing that I like so much about this book is that some of the best photographers we have taken these photographs.
Yes, it's true. And I had a lot of support from photographers, Neil Alexander in particular, Jeff Johnston, Richard Sexton, Robert Brantley.
Rick Olivier.
Rick Olivier, yes. So we have very high quality professional photographs, and each project has two pages. So there are large photographs that really allow people to understand the projects pretty thoroughly.
Well, it does make you look around your hometown in an incredibly wonderful new way. We've been talking with John Klingman, who has a sharp eye on what's new in New Orleans architecture. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan.
You can meet John Klingman at the Jazz Fest Book Tent on Sunday, April 29th from 5 to 6.
Can you show me something beautiful?
what's on tap in the literary life this week. Today's guest, Gersan, signs New Orleans Sojourn tonight, April 24th, from 6 p.m. on at Octavia Books. Moira Crone appears at an art show inspired by her novel, The Not Yet, and signs books Wednesday, April 25th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Barrister's Gallery. Lawrence Powell signs The Accidental City, Wednesday, April 25th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Maple Street Bookshop at the New Orleans Healing Center. Poets Dennis Formento and Nanette Lede present Poetry, Dance, and Music, Sunday, April 29th at 3 p.m. at the Maple Leaf Bar. The First Tuesday Book Club discusses Louise Penny's still life at 5:45 Tuesday, May 1st at Maple Street Bookshop on Maple Street. Contributors to Cornbread Nation 6, The Best of Southern Food Writing, signed the book Wednesday, May 9th at 6 p.m. at Octavia Books. And of course, Jazz Fest is coming. Watch for these authors who'll be signing in the New Orleans Gulf South Booksellers Book Tent. That's next to the music tent. Proceeds benefit the Children's Book Bank. On Friday, April 27th, Kit Wohl signs New Orleans Classic Brunches at noon. Jay Massa signs Up Front and Center, New Orleans Music at the End of the 20th Century at 1. Randy Fertel signs Gorilla Man and the Empress of Steak at 2. Carolyn Perry signs For Better For Worse at 3. Denise McConduit signs her DJ books for children at 4. And Alex Cook signs Louisiana Saturday Night at 5. On Saturday, April 28th, Tom Piazza signs Devil Sent the Rain at 1, Keith Spira signs Groove Interrupted at 2, Al Kennedy signs Big Chief Harrison and the Mardi Gras Indians at 4, and Peggy Scott Laborde signs Lost Restaurants of New Orleans at 5. And on Sunday, April 29th, Alden Taylor signs Harry Taylor Who Dat Dog at noon. Johnette Downing signs Why the Oyster Has the Pearl at 1. Diane de las Casas signs Dinosaur Mardi Gras at 2. Ben Sandmill signs Ernie Cato at 3. Larry Powell signs Accidental City at 4. And John Klingman signs New in New Orleans Architecture from 5 to 6. Major support for The Reading Life is provided by Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org or email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org. Thanks for listening and keep reading.